Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on D-Plex. The content featured in this episode on integrating IP and data management comes from Kareem El-Hilali.
You know, if you think about protecting something incredibly valuable, I mean, the instinct is usually very physical, right? It's very tactile.
Oh, absolutely. We like things we can touch.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you have a solid gold bar, you put it in a heavy steel safe, you lock the heavy door, you spin the mechanical dial, and well, you're done.
Right, because you know exactly what you are protecting and you know exactly where it is sitting.
Exactly. The boundaries are incredibly clear in that scenario.
Yeah, the asset is a defined object. And the threat is just someone trying to physically break into that box.
But imagine if that solid gold bar could suddenly turn into a mist.
A mist. Okay.
Yeah, like a mist that just floats out the keyhole of the safe.
Uh-huh.
And it travels through the air vents. And suddenly that incredibly valuable asset is just everywhere in the building all at once.
You definitely can't just buy a better safe for that.
No, you really can't. And frankly, that mist is what runs the global economy right now.
Oh, for sure.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today in this deep dive. We're looking at how on earth you take that overwhelming invisible cloud of information and actually turn it into a protected, profit-generating asset.
Which is not easy.
It's really not. Yeah. But whether you are running a business or managing a team or, you know, just trying to understand the digital footprint you create every single day, you need to know how these invisible things are actually managed.
And to crack that code, we are looking really closely at a fascinating lecture by Kareem El-Hilali.
Yes, his work on this is just incredible.
It really is. He focuses on a concept called the hybrid IP and data management model. And he sets up this exact friction you're talking about with the mist.
Right.
Because we're living in an era where traditional intellectual property management, like that old steel safe, simply cannot contain the mist anymore. Data has completely rewritten the foundational rules of what an asset even is.
And I want to start right there, actually, with the definition of the asset itself. Because, you know, we use the word data so casually.
I throw it around all the time.
We really do. But before we talk about protecting it, we have to define what it actually is. Because it's clearly no longer just a spreadsheet sitting on a dusty basement server.
No, not at all. And El-Hilali addresses this directly in his lecture by introducing the DIKWI model. That's DIKWI.
Okay.
It is a framework that maps out the evolutionary journey of data. Because raw data by itself isn't actually a valuable asset yet.
Wait, really? It's not?
No, it has to earn that status through a very specific transformation.
Okay, I love a good framework. Let's build this out. What is the D at the starting line?
So the D is simply data. These are your raw, unorganized facts, just isolated points that really don't mean anything on their own.
Like what?
Well, to illustrate this, the lecture uses an analogy from the movie Top Gun.
Oh, nice.
Right. So imagine you were just looking at raw numbers on a screen. You see an altitude of 10,000 feet, a speed of Mach 2, and a set of GPS coordinates.
Okay.
That is just data.
Which is totally useless until you know why you are looking at it.
Exactly. Which brings us to the I, which stands for information. You transform data into information by giving it context.
Ah, okay. So what's the context in Top Gun?
In the Top Gun scenario, the context is that you are a fighter pilot, and those numbers represent an enemy jet that is just locked onto your tail.
Oh, wow. Suddenly, those raw numbers are highly, highly relevant.
And very relevant.
So we have data, we have information. What turns that into the K? Knowledge.
Knowledge comes from aggregation and pattern recognition. You take that contextual information and you combine it with experience.
Okay, so the pilot realizes something based on past flights.
Right. The pilot knows that when an enemy jet approaches at that specific speed and altitude, they typically attempt a specific firing maneuver. The information has been synthesized into a recognized threat pattern.
So the pilot completely understands the landscape now.
Exactly.
Then we hit the W, wisdom. Now, I feel like knowledge and wisdom often get treated like synonyms, but in this model, they have to be different, right?
They are very different. Knowledge is understanding the pattern. Wisdom is knowing the solution to the pattern.
Oh, that's a great distinction.
Yeah, so for our pilot, wisdom is the understanding of the exact countermaneuver required to break the enemy's radar lock based on past engagements.
So they know exactly what to do.
Right. And in a business context, wisdom is the collection of, you know, useful tips, tricks, and established solutions your team has built up over time.
That makes total sense. And the final evolution, the I, at the very end of DIKVI.
Insight. Insight emerges when you take that accumulated wisdom and actually apply it in real time to your operations.
So actually doing the thing.
Yes. The pilot executes the countermaneuver and survives. A business executes a strategic pivot and captures a new market. That entire journey from raw numbers to life-saving action is how data actually becomes an asset.
Let's ground that in a corporate setting for a second. So data is 1,000 clicks on a website.
Right.
Information is knowing those clicks happened on the checkout page. Knowledge is realizing 80% of those people abandon their cart.
Mm-hmm. Wisdom is figuring out the buy button is too hard to find. And insight is actually redesigning the page, which immediately boosts revenue by 15%.
That is a perfect translation of the model.
So data evolves from raw numbers into this highly strategic insight that actually drives a business.
Exactly.
But that brings up a glaring problem for me. If I have a gold bar, its value is tied to its scarcity. I only have one of them. But in his lecture, LLE outlines some very weird characteristics of data. Like, he says it is touchless, it is measurable, and he calls it consumeless.
Consumeless is the key word there. Its use does not diminish its value.
Which is wild. It's like having a limitless battery, you know?
Yeah.
Using it to power a flashlight doesn't drain the battery at all.
Right.
I can copy a database a million times. I can send it to 1,000 employees, and the original data set is still perfectly intact.
It doesn't degrade.
So how do you appraise a limitless battery? I mean, if it's not scarce, how do we even begin to put a price tag on it?
Well, that is a multi-million dollar question for modern organizations. You cannot value it like a physical object. LLE details a specific multi-layered valuation framework for this.
Okay.
Instead of appraising the object itself, you have to measure the infrastructure surrounding it and the potential energy it holds.
How does that actually work on a balance sheet, though?
First, you measure the cost of acquisition, like what labor, software, and time actually went into gathering those initial raw facts.
So the entry cost.
Right. Then you factor in storage costs. And we aren't just talking about buying a few hard drives. We are talking about cloud architecture, server maintenance, and IT salaries.
So you are basically valuing the container, essentially.
Partially, yeah. Then you have to calculate the replacement cost. If a server wipes out tomorrow, what is the sheer financial burden of rebuilding that entire DIKVI journey from scratch?
The lost time, the labor.
Exactly. Furthermore, you have to measure the potential financial loss if a competitor got their hands on it.
Oh, right. The risk factor.
So you assess your risk mitigation costs, which is basically your entire cybersecurity budget.
Mm.
And finally, you evaluate the potential revenue generation. What competitive advantages does this specific insight give you in the market?
Can you package and sell the data itself, right?
Exactly. When you combine all those factors, acquisition, storage, replacement, risk, and revenue, you finally have a monetary value for something that is fundamentally invisible and infinite.
Wow. Okay, so if we are putting a concrete financial value on this data based heavily on the risk of losing it, the immediate next step has to be protection.
Naturally.
But when a company tries to lock down its assets, it usually defaults to the old physical world systems we talked about.
And this is where we run into traditional intellectual property management, or IPM. Historically, the entire goal of IPM was taking creations of the human mind and forcing them into tangible formats that a legal system could actually build a fence around.
And El-Heli makes a really crucial distinction here in the lecture, right? Between the property and the right to the property.
It is a vital separation. He differentiates the invention itself, which is the actual intellectual property, from the patent, which is merely the intellectual property right.
Give me an example of that.
Well, to use an everyday example, a photograph you take is the intellectual property. The copyright is the intellectual property right.
Oh, got it. So it's the gold bar versus the legal deed to the gold bar.
Exactly that. One is the creation. The other is the legal boundary designed to protect it. And traditionally, managing these boundaries has relied on a very rigid value hierarchy pyramid.
Okay, so let's say I am a company with a new invention. I'm at the bottom of this traditional pyramid. What is actually happening down there?
The bottom is the defensive center. It is pure administrative grunt work.
Sounds fun.
Oh, it's thrilling. You are planning, you are compiling physical blueprints or descriptions, and you are ensuring all the correct paperwork is formatted perfectly for filing.
Lots of forms.
So many forms. Then you go to the patent office, you pay your fees, and you enter what is called the prosecution phase. This is just arguing with examiners until a patent is officially granted.
So the entire foundation of the pyramid is essentially just incurring massive costs and waiting months or even years just to get a piece of paper that says this is mine.
Correct. Once you survive that, you move up to the commercialization stage. This is where you actually attempt to recoup those initial investments and make money off your rights.
How so?
You might license the patent to another manufacturer, cross-license it with a competitor, use it to secure venture capital, or use litigation to sue someone who stepped over your boundary.
And what's at the peak of the pyramid?
The visionary stage. That involves looking at your entire portfolio and the market and identifying opportunities to create brand new patents, or strategically designing around existing competitor patents based on where the industry is heading.
I mean, that is a very methodical, step-by-step, almost glacial process. You file, you wait, you license, you strategize.
Very slow.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
But here is the massive contradiction, right? In the lecture, Alhala introduces the data lifecycle. And he compares it directly to this traditional IP lifecycle.
He does. He maps out the data lifecycle, starting with planning and specifying, then enabling, creating and acquiring, maintaining and using, archiving and retrieving, and finally purging or deleting.
Okay.
And what he reveals is that this continuous data loop fundamentally mirrors the stages of the traditional IP lifecycle.
But the speeds are completely incompatible. I mean, if traditional IP management is this highly structured pyramid of patent offices and examiners that takes years, how can it possibly handle data that is fluid, updating every millisecond and scattered across 1,000 cloud servers?
Well, the short answer is it absolutely cannot handle it.
It just breaks.
The traditional system breaks down completely. And that friction, the messy, limitless nature of data colliding with the strict, archaic rigidity of traditional IP, is exactly why Alhala argues that managing them in isolation is a massive corporate vulnerability.
But if I'm a CEO, my instinct is compartmentalization. My legal team handles the patents and the lawsuits. My IT department handles the servers and the firewalls. Why is that logical separation suddenly so dangerous?
Because you have to look at what a patent actually is in the digital age. The core rationale of his hybrid model, which he calls integrating IP and data management, or IPDM, is recognizing the pervasive nature of data.
Right.
Think about your patents, your legal claims, your trade secrets. They aren't pieces of parchment locked in a filing cabinet anymore. They are vast, complex digital footprints.
Oh, I see. The legal document is literally made of data.
Exactly. Therefore, if you manage legal and IT completely separately, it becomes impossible for the company to monitor what qualifies as a valuable legal asset and what poses a massive cybersecurity risk.
So they are flying blind.
Completely. Your legal team might spend millions securing a patent, but if your IT team doesn't understand the legal significance of those specific files, they might not apply the right security protocols.
And then the data leaks.
The data leaks, and your expensive legal protection becomes entirely meaningless.
So the mist escapes the safe because the IT guy didn't even know the mist was gold.
That is the perfect way to phrase it.
Yeah.
So to prevent that, Alhala proposes managing both of these massive complex assets under one unified roof.
But, I mean, you are talking about combining two completely different corporate species here. Lawyers are trained to look backward at historical precedents and rigid rules, right?
Yes.
And IT professionals are trained to look forward at fluid systems, rapid updates, and constant iteration.
It is a monumental challenge. Alhala acknowledges that IP lawyers must now acquire a foundational technical understanding of data management. They actually have to know how servers talk to each other.
Which is not what they went to law school for.
Not at all. And conversely, the IT team has to understand legal ramifications. To make this work, the entire organization has to adopt what he calls a unified data language, or UDL.
So, if we are setting up a corporate marriage between the IT department and the legal team, this unified data language is basically the mandatory couples counseling they need just to be able to sit in the same room.
Yes. Because they have been speaking completely different dialects for decades, the hybrid model forces them to translate.
Okay, so how do they actually do that?
Well, to facilitate this highly complex corporate marriage, LLE introduces a very practical step-by-step solution called the M3 methodology.
M3. Okay, let's dig into how they actually run this counseling session. What is the first M?
The first M is matching. This is the crucial first step where IT and legal literally sit down, align their subject matter to find common ground.
Okay.
They have to identify shared definitions, shared goals, and shared criteria between their data assets and their intellectual property.
Give me a hypothetical of what that argument looks like in a conference room.
Okay, so IT might look at a server and say, this is user database 4. It requires standard encryption. Legal looks at the exact same server and says, that is our proprietary client asset. It is the core of our upcoming patent application.
Oh, they don't even call it the same thing.
Exactly. Matching is the process where they realize they are talking about the exact same thing, and they formally agree on a shared definition and a shared goal for protecting it.
Because you have to agree on what the asset is before you can build a strategy around it. That makes sense. So once they finally agree and match the language, what is the second M?
Merging. Once the definitions are matched, you merge the data operations and the IP assets to capitalize on existing protections.
What does that look like practically?
This involves meticulously classifying and categorizing these newly combined assets within the company's digital architecture.
But what does merging them actually achieve for the company?
By merging them under a unified framework, you unlock the ability to leverage incredibly strong legal IP protections for your digital data assets.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, you are effectively wrapping your vulnerable digital data in heavy legal armor while simultaneously using your digital tools to enforce your legal boundaries.
They feed into each other, which naturally leads to the final M.
Managing. Now that the assets are matched in definition and merged in classification, you need structured, ongoing oversight.
Because it doesn't just run on autopilot.
No, definitely not. This involves establishing clear operational procedures, regular audits, and feedback loops to ensure the long-term success of this integrated strategy.
Okay, to really grasp how powerful this is, we need to see this corporate marriage function in the real world. How do an IT protocol and a legal argument actually support each other?
Well, the lecture provides a fantastic concrete case study on exactly this, focusing on the intersection of trade secrets and data security.
Okay, let's break that down.
These are two concepts that usually live on opposite ends of a corporate campus, but LLE shows how deeply intertwined they actually are.
Let's define them separately first, just to see the gap. What is a trade secret from a strict traditional legal perspective?
Legally, a trade secret is defined as commercially usable information that derives its economic value specifically from being kept reasonably secret.
So think like the recipe for Coca-Cola or the algorithm for Google search?
Yes, exactly. Its entire competitive advantage relies on confidentiality. The moment it is no longer a secret, the legal protection evaporates and the value drops to zero.
Wow.
Furthermore, legally, a company must prove they made reasonable efforts to keep it a secret.
And then on the other side of the campus, you have the IT department focused on data security.
Right. And their goal isn't legal definitions. Their goal is purely operational. They want to enable appropriate access for authorized personnel and aggressively prevent inappropriate access for unauthorized personnel.
Ensuring privacy and system integrity.
Exactly.
So if we apply the M3 methodology here, first we match them. Legal wants confidentiality to maintain a trade secret. IT wants access controls to prevent unauthorized entry. The goals are perfectly aligned.
They match seamlessly. Then you merge them. By classifying the data asset as both a trade secret and a high security data tier, you create incredible synergy.
How so?
The IT department's firewall logs, their encryption standards, and their access protocols become the literal physical evidence that the legal team uses in court to prove they maintained reasonable secrecy.
Oh, the IT controls are the legal armor.
Yes.
Legal can stand before a judge and say, look at these encryption logs. We clearly treated this as a secret. They reinforce each other perfectly.
It's a beautiful system when it works.
But rolling this out across an entire multinational company seems totally daunting. If I am listening to this and I want to implement this hybrid model, is my biggest hurdle going to be purchasing some massive expensive operational software?
Actually, LLE is very clear on this. The software is the easy part.
Really?
The monumental hurdle is the human challenge. Getting people to fundamentally change their daily habits and their view of their own work.
That is always the hardest part.
Always. He breaks the management phase down into three specific steps to tackle this human element: definition, engagement, and operation.
Let's walk through that rollout. How do you tackle the human element in the definition phase?
Definition is entirely about securing top-down leadership buy-in. You absolutely must establish clear roles, responsibilities, and a unified vision from the C-suite all the way down to the frontline data entry clerks.
What happens if you don't?
If the executives do not actively champion this hybrid model, the departments will just retreat to their old silos and the initiative will fail.
Because you are asking people to completely unlearn how they have operated for their entire careers. You can't just send an email memo and expect that to happen.
No, definitely not.
So what happens in the engagement phase?
Engagement is where you embed the system into the actual corporate culture. You integrate this new IPDM system into daily data operations, routine compliance checks, and external partner agreements.
Making it part of the routine.
Exactly. But most importantly, it encompasses extensive training and socialization. You have to teach your staff why this matters, not just hand them a new rule book. They need to understand the DIKWI journey.
Right. They have to see how their raw data becomes business insight. And finally, operation.
Operation is the new day-to-day reality. The ongoing security audits, the performance deliverables, the continuous feedback loops.
Checking to see if it's actually working.
Right. It is the process of making sure the system remains aligned with your business objectives as the market shifts. LLE emphasizes that sustaining this entire program requires a continuous dual-layered approach.
What means?
Top-down mandates combined with bottom-up cultural shifts. It requires mentorship, coaching, seminars. You are fundamentally building a corporate culture of acute IP and data awareness.
So what does this all actually mean for you listening right now? It means that data is not just a byproduct of doing business anymore. It isn't the exhaust coming out of the tailpipe of your company's operations.
No, it's not.
Data is the engine itself. It is the foundational asset. Karim El-Helaloi's hybrid model basically proves that in today's digital economy, you can no longer protect your big ideas without meticulously protecting the invisible data that makes those ideas possible.
Exactly.
The heavy steel safe does absolutely nothing when your most valuable asset is floating in the cloud.
It really requires a total paradigm shift in how we view value. And, you know, if we look back at the very beginning of our discussion at the DIKWI model, where raw data eventually evolves into actionable insight and wisdom when applied to a business,
yeah.
This raises a fascinating and somewhat provocative implication.
Oh, I like where this is going. What is the implication?
Well, if data is truly a consumless asset, meaning it never runs out, and organizations are continuously using this hybrid model to capture, merge, and protect endless digital insight.
Right.
Who actually owns the wisdom of an entire workforce once it has been digitized? Right. If your daily decisions, your personal problem-solving tips, and your creative workarounds are all aggregated into permanent corporate insight under this legal framework, it really changes how you think about every single email you send and every process you document, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely does. You aren't just completing a task anymore. You are actively generating permanent, consumeless, legally protected assets for a corporate machine.
Yep.
Your brain's output literally becomes the company's property forever. That is a heavy, fascinating thought to leave on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Karim El-Helaloi's lecture. We really encourage you to look at your own digital footprint, both in the office and at home, through this entirely new lens. Mm. Remember, the gold isn't sitting in the safe anymore. It is in the mist all around you. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.